Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.21. The small child in the background is, in fact, a small child. It is not a figment of your imagination. Also, Ace was kicked off the hockey portion of the podcast because he caused us to lose by watching it. Hello, Ace.
How's it going, Brian?
You're a little more mature-seeming today.
Why is that, Brian?
Because there's a two-year-old roaming around our podcast, so daylight savings time has thrown off the little dude's nap. If you hear any yammering in the background, that's probably him, but it might be Dave.
You know, depends if we're talking hockey or hoops.
And I want to emphasize that I am keeping extremely close watch on my son, and I am a good parent. Yes, thank you. He has just handed me some things.
He may have earlier said, don't suffocate.
Well, that's good advice. Also, I took it away from him, eventually.
Eventually.
This is not good.
He may be just picking up various pieces of podcast equipment.
Anyway, why we still have them, I'd like to thank our sponsors, which are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So Michigan gets a 3 seed in Wichita, which is, I think, about what people expected going in.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people were hoping to be placed at least in Nashville.
Yeah.
But it's at least in the Wichita bracket, none of the other teams in that pod are close. So yeah. It's not like Michigan's going to have a functional road game out there. And Michigan State did get the Detroit draw, which rankled a bit, but they also got one of the hardest draws in the entire tournament. So I'd rather have Michigan's path.
Yeah, so if Michigan does get to the Sweet 16, their likely opponents are UNC and Xavier or Gonzaga in Los Angeles. So there's not really a lot of home court involved.
Yeah, despite Mark Titus's insistence, Gonzaga and Los Angeles are not close to each other.
No.
Should not really factor into any sort of home court advantage.
And Michigan State got Duke, who is a cannot beat. And they have Kansas in Omaha. So Michigan knows what it was like to play Kansas in Dallas.
Yeah, that was tough.
And Omaha is just going to be wall-to-wall periwinkle? What is it there? Royal blue? I don't know.
Yeah, let's go with Royal Blue. We also got to see up close how they traveled for the Kansas City Regional last year that Michigan didn't share with them. But.
Yeah, so, you know, overall, fairly pleased. I mean, the biggest problem is that Michigan did lose to North Carolina by...
lots.
15 in a game that was not anywhere near that close.
No. That was like an entirely different Michigan basketball team.
It was. You had Xavier Simpson get one more minute than E.B. Watson.
That alone should just be like, let's throw this game out the window.
Right. You know, Eli Brooks starts and gets the most minutes of any point guard. Livers and Poole are getting like their first extended time against a real opponent.
Yeah, no, that was really like the let's test the freshmen in the second half during kind of blowout time game.
Yeah.
So that was the first time they'd really seen.
They got 3 buckets across, I think, 15 minutes of gameplay after like that really hot start. And they weren't playing the kind of defense that they've played for, I'd say, the back half of the season.
So. Yeah, it's also the game where Michigan, probably more than any other game this year, really let the tempo get away from them.
Yeah,
that game was played very much at North Carolina's pace, and Michigan has become
and was played at North Carolina.
That also is something we should bring up. So it
was a disappointing game and a. They're probably their worst performance of the season, but I don't expect that.
Northwestern.
I would say North Carolina was even worse. I mean, maybe.
I don't know. They lost by more at Nebraska than they did at North Carolina.
I know, but like that was because there was KenPom time at the end of the Michigan game.
That's true. But, yeah. Anyway, it was definitely one of their 3 worst performances of the season.
But I would expect the North Carolina game to be much more competitive and tooth and nail. I mean, North Carolina did probably have the toughest schedule in the country, definitely, if you look at Pomeroy. But they also lost to Wofford.
Yep.
and 9 other teams. So not
an they're clearly beatable.
Clearly beatable, and it would be a functional neutral court. And then the one seed is actually ranked worse than Michigan, actually ranked worse than the 4 seed. So they dodge Virginia, Villanova, Duke, and Cincinnati, the top 4 teams in KenPom. You know, 5 and 6 are both Big Ten teams, and then they get North Carolina, Gonzaga. It's a really even regional once you get to the Sweet 16 level, and I don't think you can ask for anything more as a 3 seed.
Yeah, yeah. If you're getting North Carolina, may not be a coin flip, but with the rest of them, I would say it's about there.
Yeah, and you know, the first 2 rounds look worse from a KenPom perspective. They pulled the top 14.
By a solid margin.
Yeah, they're number 71, but that's, you know, still shouldn't really matter.
No.
Like, if you're a 5 seed and you draw the best 12, that's where you start getting nervous.
Yeah.
If you're a 3 seed and you draw the best 14, that's still a situation where you're like, I mean, we should really be able to handle these guys.
Yeah, it might be like we're only winning this by 15 instead of 25, but that's really more what it should be.
And I've watched the majority of the Big Sky Championship game right now, and they don't really seem to be a team that I think is upset likely.
Like, no.
They're dependent on their point guard, who will have to go up against Xavier Simpson, which is not a good thing. They have 2 6'8" guys who they rely on a lot for both offensive rebounding purposes and just getting shots at the rim, and neither of those guys is a stretch at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about 6'8" guys who aren't going to be able to spread Michigan out going up against defenders that they don't really see in the Big Sky. And then, you know, Montana's record is good. They're 16-2 in their league. They're up there at 71st in KenPom. But a large portion of that is because they've just been hand-blasting.
Really bad teams.
Yeah, so they'll beat them by 30. And then when they step up, not even to like a KenPom A level, which they have one of this year, which is a loss at Penn State by 13. When you get to the KenPom B level.
Yeah, the teams that are in like the hanging around 100th range.
Right, like Georgia State, which is a 15 seed, is there. UC Santa Barbara. There are 3 road games in the Big Sky that count as KenPom B games. They're 1-6 in those games.
Yeah.
And so when they've stepped up in level, they've really fallen off. And, you know, I don't really see a path to victory for them that doesn't involve Michigan just going 4 for a zilly from 3 like they almost did against Iowa.
And even then, I think Michigan would still have to fall flat on their face in other areas to lose
this
game.
Yeah, I mean, it would require a faceplant of the likes of which Michigan hasn't seen since that Ohio game.
Yeah, and this is a different program at this point than where that
was. And that
was
also a 4 versus a 13, so this is like it would take even worse than that, I think. So
yeah.
Despite the fact that Michigan got the best available 4, I don't think that's really particularly relevant.
No, I mean, we're still talking about a 3 versus a 14.
Right.
Should be approaching this with confidence.
Potentially a lot more relevant is the fact that Michigan drew the top 6.
Yes.
So KenPom has Houston, Michigan's potential 6 seed, as the number 17 team in the country, which isn't that bad because, like, you'd expect that team would be a 5 seed.
Yes.
If you rank straight on KenPom, so not the worst thing in the world for Michigan. And then if you start digging into the matchups, and I watched their semi and their final in the American tournament.
Yeah, that was one of the better tournaments going this past week.
They took the Big Ten slot, so it was like, well, I guess I'm going to watch this now.
Yeah.
So they're super dependent on Rob Gray, who's a 29% usage point guard.
Man bun,
yes. And he's half his threes are unassisted. And if you saw the Houston games in the tournament, a lot of those are, I don't know what else to do, I'm just going to jack up a 3.
High difficulty.
Which
low efficiency.
Cost them that Cincinnati game because he just jacked up a 3. And then one of their forwards went and tried their offensive rebound and committed a fairly clear, but are you really going to call that now kind of foul?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like that whistle, but probably committed a foul there.
And they're a strange team because they rely heavily on offensive rebounding to prop their offense up.
Even though they're tiny?
And they're tiny!
Like, across the board tiny.
Like, 75% of their minutes at the 4 and 5 go to 6'6 and 6'7 guys.
Yeah, and their 3 starting backcourt players are all 6'1". So it's not like they're getting a ton of secondary rebounding.
No.
And it's you look at their individual numbers, and it's like, okay, these guys go after the boards, but then you look at their fouls per 40, and it's like 8.
Yeah.
6, 7 for their front court guys.
There are some high numbers up there. They're rotating through some guys.
And the only problem with that is that Michigan, you know, doesn't take advantage of going to the free throw line as much as most opponents. But if you're fouling on a loose ball foul and that's sending you to the line because it's 10 free throws, the guys going to the line are probably Duncan,
yeah,
Mo, maybe Matthews. So I think the distribution of those free throws might be a little bit better for Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that Wagner has stepped up to be the primary board getter in that case.
The other thing that they're really good at is they're really good at canning threes. They don't get a lot of them up, but they have a couple of guys in the 40s. That's kind of the best aspect of their offense.
But neither of those guys has cracked 100 attempts from two-point range this year.
Right, so if you run them off the line, that's a situation in which you're probably going to be getting something pretty good for your defense. You know, one of the guys has like a decent assist rate, a decent number of takes inside the bucket, so you can't just, he's like just a three-point shooter, but he's got some game inside the arc, and the other guy is just pure.
Yeah, Corey Davis is the former and Armani Brooks is the latter.
And then they give up a fair number of threes. I think they're like around 200 in that, and they don't run zone. Because obviously, if they were to run zone, they would just get hammered.
You can't run zone with a lineup that small.
Because they're tiny. and they're transition dependent. So they're 13th in transition field goal efficiency on Hoop Math. They're 91st percentile on Synergy. And Michigan simply does not allow teams to run at all. So if you try to run against Michigan, you get a bad shot because they're always in position and they're always getting back. So you take away that from them. Take away their threes, and you force a 30% usage point guard to go up against Xavier Simpson. That looks like the recipe for a fairly comfortable Michigan win, as long as both teams are kind of playing in the middle of their shot-making curves, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd be a little bit more concerned if they had skilled bigs where Gray could you know, if they had to just evolve into a pick-and-roll team, then they'd at least have a couple threats there. But they are...
Or if they could post up like Haas and stuff like
that. Yeah, but they are, you know, inefficient but not great post-up team, and I'm assuming that's going against a slate of less skilled bigs than what Michigan has faced.
Well, I mean, the American Conference is...
it has some solid players in it, and Cincinnati's certainly physical.
It's kind of a big range of teams.
They're excellent with their pick-and-roll ball handling efficiency, but you've got Xavier Simpson to shut that down with Rob Gray, and they are terrible with their pick-and-roll roll men finishing off of that. They're in the 7th percentile on Synergy on finishing.
Because they're tiny.
Yeah, so if Michigan can jack up the pressure on Gray, which I suspect they'll be able to do, they don't have to worry too much about a pass slipping into a roll guy. They'll be able to contest those shots, and those will be relatively inefficient possessions.
And even though San Diego State is, I think, 50th on KenPom instead of 17th, I look at them and I'm like, I don't want that 6-11 upset, because they look like the kind of team that could, you know, overwhelm certain parts of Michigan's defensive structure and could just throw out a very long zone that would. I hate it when Michigan plays zone.
Yeah, I'd prefer Michigan be able to stick against their, you know, just
tiny man
run their normal
team,
offense.
I'm like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
Huge zone team. So they start 2 6'10 guys. They have another 6'6 guy. Their top usage guy is Malik Pope, who's a 4. And I have all the respect for Duncan Robinson, who's made it a long way as a defender.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to come up against a team where their 4 is their top usage guy. Like, that's just not what I want.
Yeah. They've also got like a legit 7'1", 270 pounder off the bench. So they have a guy to match up with Teske. They've got some interesting pieces on that team. The good news is they are a significantly worse team than Houston, so you will have some offset there.
Yeah, they're a worse team. They're also a worse matchup.
Yeah,
but they don't shoot a lot of threes, and they're not very good at it.
No,
you know, they're pretty thin.
They give up a ton of 3-point looks.
That's zone though. So
yeah,
there's you know, a lot of those are just like, oh,
we're shooting over those. Yeah.
So they're like Syracuse, and like they give up a ton of threes, but they're often bad threes. So I think they're top 30, 40 in terms of 3-point percentage allowed.
66, but opponents are only making 33%, so they're doing pretty solid there.
Pretty good job. And you know, I don't think Michigan should be afraid of this team, but I also don't think that there's a whole lot of matchup upside in getting the 6-11 upset.
Yeah, no, it's weird to say because Houston has been kind of Houston's clearly the best 6 seed, I think, but I think for Michigan's purposes, I'd probably still rather get them.
Yeah, and you know, I as far as a 6 seed, like a team from the American or the Mountain West, like they've certainly suggested that they're pretty good, but they also play like a large section of their games against pretty dog teams. And that's right, little buddy, dog teams.
Dog teams.
Yes, dog teams. Say something, Ace.
they're certainly not running into a lot of offenses like John Beilein's.
So I feel fairly confident about Michigan getting out of the first weekend.
Yes.
Just, you know, I think the draw is good for Michigan. I think they got some good teams, but I think that they match up real well against them. And it's going to be a neutral court. And Michigan's on a roll. I think it's all good.
John Beilein, week to prepare.
Yeah.
And then an opponent having a day to prepare for John Beilein. It's a good setup, the tourney, for John Beilein.
Yeah, that's another reason that San Diego State doesn't really appeal, because it's like... Zone is zone, right?
Yeah, they're going to just run their stuff.
So
Houston will have to really make some adjustments.
Yep. As far as the other side of the draw goes, like the only kind of disappointing thing is it's like 100% going to be UNC if they get the Sweet 16.
Yeah, like I am generally just not trusting the entire SEC. Every time I watch SEC basketball, I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, 9-9 A&M team.
Like, why are there so many highly ranked teams from this conference? So A&M, I don't see it.
I think Providence
has a better chance, and I still don't see it.
I mean, I do like that Providence's coach is just Bunk Moreland 10 years later.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good coach.
He's a good coach. Better detective. So yeah, I just don't see it. This, like the 7-10 matchup there is not exactly last year's Michigan Oklahoma State matchup.
No, which it's
was
not
a Sweet 16 game that they had in the first round.
Yeah,
this is just some dudes.
This is a first round matchup.
So, you know, I just can't see any way that UNC isn't the opponent in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, then, you know, I prefer bracing myself for that anyway, and then being very pleasantly surprised if it goes any other way.
Then you're looking at, you know, Xavier, Gonzaga, maybe Ohio State.
Ohio State Gonzaga is going to be interesting if it comes down to that.
It's not. Gonzaga's just going to blow the doors off them.
We'll see.
Like, I mean, they're still playing Dockage.
Andrew Dockage.
Close, though.
I mean,
for 20 minutes a game.
But they've somehow, like, they've made it this far doing that.
It's
something that somewhat boggles the mind, but it's somehow working for him.
I mean, all respect to Chris Holtman's coach of the year job in the Big Ten this year, but it's smoke and mirrors, and I think it's going to catch up to them.
Yeah, I don't expect it to be a long run, except I just...
Who they got, like, in the first round?
South Dakota State.
I might take that upset.
I don't know if I go that far.
That's
but...
another segment.
Yes.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Hey, Brian, I want you to know something. Icicles are pretty.
They're pretty wasteful. If you have icicles, chances are you have cold rooms. Here's what you need to do. You need to call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Make mine the people. I want my funk uncut. Yeah, make my funk the people. I want to get funked up. Now, this is what I want y'all to do. If you got faults, defects, or shortcomings, you know, like arthritis, rheumatism, or migraines, whatever part of your body it is, I want you to lay it on your radio. Let the vibes flow through. Funk not only moves, it can remove.
All right, Ace, everybody else has their bad bracket opinions. And we have a popular podcast. So it is our right and duty to give everybody else our bad bracket opinions.
And let me tell you, these are going to be bad.
Are they? They're not going to be as bad as TBS giving Charles and Kenny one blackboard between them and ask them to fill out one bracket.
Yeah, that wasn't great. Neither was three of the four ESPN panelists picking Michigan State to make the title game.
They picked everybody. All of them picked Michigan to the Elite Eight.
I like that part.
Which is weird because, like, okay, you're picking Michigan over UNC, and then all of you are just like, yeah, they're going to lose to a worse team in the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, a little strange. Bit strange.
Yeah, I don't get the Michigan State thing. I guess we can start there.
Yeah, let's do that.
So Michigan State has a 13-game win streak that features, like, we went to overtime against Iowa. We had a 27-point deficit against Northwestern. We scraped it out against, was it Maryland? They had a close game against Rutgers.
Yeah, they did. It was a series of scraping. They only beat Indiana by three. They had a real tight scrape with
them.
They
go to the Big Ten tournament and they beat Wisconsin by three, and then Michigan handles them. Like, this looks like a, I mean, this is, so I'm not the most unbiased person about Michigan State, but they just look like a team that's been scraping by with kind of bad wins against not great teams. And, like, you know, Winston has a 57% shooting performance from three. Is that sustainable? And if it's not sustainable, like, what does Michigan State look like? Especially if Kenny Goins is playing 20 minutes.
Which seems to be a thing that's going to keep happening because it's been happening.
And they, you know, they get, like, probably Jamie Dixon in round two. And Jamie Dixon, pretty good coach.
Yeah.
His departure from Pittsburgh did not go well.
Not for Pittsburgh, no. Certainly not.
And then they get Duke, and Izzo can't beat Duke. So, like, I don't see, like, for everybody on ESPN to pick them to the Final Four is like, dude,
Yeah,
first they have to beat a team they never beat, and then they have to beat Kansas probably in Kansas.
Yeah, I don't see how they get out of that region. I really don't. Yeah.
I don't know
with the way they're playing. I mean, I will acknowledge Izzo has done some things with teams that I did not expect him to do things with in the tournament. And there is some, like, I can see them having a bit of a transformation where he you know, stops doing the nonsensical lineup stuff.
Sure,
and everything.
Sure, he plays Jaren Jackson 35 minutes a game.
Like, Nick Ward gets more time. When Nick Ward's not playing, he just lets Jaren Jackson play center and puts Bridges at the four.
Although that doesn't work for them.
Surprisingly, their on-off stats
stink there. Probably because they never do that.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe if they actually friggin' practiced it, you know, instead of just playing gladiators.
Playing gladiators.
Yeah.
It would be quintessential Michigan State if Penn, the best 16 seed in 6 years, beats Kansas and erases that road game in the Elite Eight. It's probably not going to happen.
Duke every few years just like trips over themselves.
I guess Mercer.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
But Duke.
And you do have like the. They are across from Trae Young, and that dude could just blow up.
No
Oklahoma's
way.
Been so bad.
There's
don't
no
get
way.
Me wrong. But the dude could go for like 40.
He could go for 40, and Oklahoma would score 45.
You know, probably true. But if you're talking about a dude who can shoot over a zone, you know, he's an interesting player there.
All right, who's in the regional final in the Midwest?
I'm taking Kansas coming out of it. I'm going chalk in that one.
Regional final, so Kansas versus
Kansas Duke. Taking Kansas because of the home court.
Any double digit seeds make the Sweet 16? Don't say Oklahoma.
I'm not saying Oklahoma. If I had to pick one, I don't think there will be one. If I had to pick one, it'd actually be New Mexico State because Clemson, I think, is kind of shaky a little bit.
You're just saying that because they have Mark Donnell.
Well, and one of their bigs got and one of their big men got hurt, so Mark Donnell is now their primary backup big man.
Ooh.
That's a big injury for them. Dante Grantham got hurt.
All right, I'm picking that one. That's a 5-12. That's like
One of those is going to happen. That one stands out to me, and not just for kind of for Mark Donnell reasons, but let's be real. We've seen it up close.
I know Syracuse is butt and has absolutely no depth, but
not have been in here, but that's another side.
But throw a 2-3 zone against teams that aren't really prepared to go up against it, and you could get a couple of... Didn't Syracuse go like first four to final four or something? Or
yeah, they've made some improbable runs themselves in the tournament, and they draw Michigan State. So, you know, if they get past ECU and Arizona State...
All right, we're moving over to the East region, which is headed by Villanova. Virginia Tech and Alabama are a couple of pretty interesting 8-9 seeds.
They are.
West Virginia versus Murray State in a that's going to be a good one. Wichita State is the 4. Texas Tech is the 3. Florida is the 6. Arkansas Butler is the 7-10. You get Purdue on the other side of the bracket. I have Purdue smashing this regional. I know I've been like... Everybody's like, you can't believe in Purdue or the tournament. I'm like, no. That's just, I mean.
I'm with you in that Purdue is a serious threat. Villanova is so dang good.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I feel, I'm going to get mad at myself for, like, picking chalk in every region but the Midwest probably. But that Nova team is really, really good, and we have seen Purdue's flaws over the last couple of years.
I don't know.
I think Nova's a team that can 3 is greater than 2 them to pretty solid win.
So if you want to kill the giant that is Purdue, you want a stretch 5. Does Nova have a stretch 5?
They do. Omari Spellman has hit 44% of his 3s this year.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at their... They have 6 guys who rank in the 3-point percentage.
I'm telling you, they're outrageous. Mikael Bridges is tremendous. Jalen Brunson. They've got 2 guys in the top 10 of the KenPom Player of the Year standings. Brunson's as good a point guard in the country. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They have 2 guys with 130 O ratings. Oh, God. And they're their 2 highest usage guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that is especially messed up. Bridges is a lottery pick. Brunson might be the best point guard in the country.
God.
you've really got some great pieces there. I just think, and that's a team that is put together to beat Purdue.
All right. God. All right.
And that's the thing. I would like Purdue coming out of a lot of regions. If they were in there with Virginia, that'd be real interesting. I'd like Purdue in that game.
No, I'm still picking Purdue. I believe in
against all odds.
I'm going with Purdue. Haas is going to be 30 for 32 against. I mean, they're not very big.
It's true. Spellman's 6'8". So
sag off Purdue shooters. That's going to be like 100 to 98. And I got the Boilers because I remember that game where Mar was unconscious and it didn't matter. That's how they play all the time, right, little buddy? He's being shy. So yeah, you have Nova.
Yeah,
well, we both have chalk in the regional final.
Yeah, for the second straight bracket.
All right, any double digit seeds make the Sweet 16?
Out of this one,
hell no.
Yeah, no. But Butler's not beating Purdue. I don't like Arkansas at all.
I mean, Murray,
UCLA maybe, or St. Bonaventure?
No, no way.
You don't see a potential Florida? Like, I'm not sold on
the real bad version of Michigan, you know, beat UCLA. Like, I'm not really.
Yeah, sorry. Not UCLA. St. Bonaventure. That's
Bonnies,
a good team.
The Bonnies. I don't like
the Bonnies
them.
Probably got underseeded a little bit.
I don't like them because they're like Utah, where it's like, or Troy, where it's like, we're the same thing. It's just our nickname. So I can't root for them. That's a really rational thing to say. I'm good at being rational. In the South, Virginia is the 1 seed, Creighton the 8, Kansas State the 9, Kentucky and Davidson is the 5-12, Arizona and Buffalo is the 4-13, Miami is 6, Loyola Chicago is the 11, Tennessee and Wright State 3-14, Nevada and Texas, and then Cincinnati is the 2. You know what?
You're just leaving out Georgia State here? It's yes. The only team you're not going to mention? Cool.
I didn't mention UMBC.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
I believe in Virginia this year. I think that everybody says, you know, they make the tournament and then they collapse, but they're just at another level this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, I mean, that defense is so far ahead of every other defense in the country except for Cincinnati that it's kind of absurd. And they're still a couple points per possession better than Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They're the best team in the country, potentially with the exception of Villanova. And my main concern with them is that they shorten games to the point where they might get upset in a game where they shouldn't.
That I was going to bring that up. Like, if they get down by 10,
then that happens.
They're all done.
Yeah.
If they get down by 10, then they're all done. Good job, buddy. Fist bump.
This is a very professional podcast today.
The one thing that this is the two best defensive teams in the country by a mile, but I kind of like, I don't know. I watched the Houston Cincinnati game and I was like, I don't know if either of these teams are any good.
Yeah, I'm less sold on Cincinnati than Virginia by a decent stretch. I mean, they're able to do it in a conference of lesser quality. I know efficiency is adjusted on KenPom, but I still think there's a capability of building that up. Where
this is outright stupid, but I'm kind of looking at Texas and being like, they could win that game 35-34. Like, that could happen. Get Mo Bamba out there doing Mo Bamba things.
I mean, if Bamba's, you know, fully back healthy,
Texas is going to be like 2-30 from three, but Texas, that's going to be enough. It could happen.
You know, I could see him winning an ugly, ugly, ugly game there. And actually, if we hop back to the top end of that bracket for a second, I could see Arizona making some noise against Virginia.
Really?
I mean, first of all, if you haven't watched DeAndre Ayton,
I mean,
my goodness.
Okay, but it's not like Virginia hasn't gone out against
some very, very talented
Duke
players.
And UNC. It's not like they're going to be shell-shocked.
But Arizona's just one of those teams where it seems like, you know, they've been missing key players at different stretches throughout the year where it seems like they haven't necessarily been able to build a certain cohesiveness that they could have. Like Alonzo Trier has been in and out of the lineup with the PED suspension and whatever. They didn't hold out Ayton. But Riley Alkins was hurt for a while. Like, you've got some guys who are really good. Like that team, certainly talent wise, is better than a four seed. And
yeah, I think
when they're at full strength, I mean, especially if Virginia is in a shortened game and Arizona goes on a run, they've got some guys who can really. I mean, Trigger's a great off the ball shooter. Alkins is a really impressive player. Like I and Aiden is a top three NBA draft pick without
a doubt.
How
much credence do you give the idea that Kentucky is really young and so they're more dangerous than an average five seed because they're better? They've improved more than an average team has over the course of the season.
I'd give that some credence. I mean, especially seeing kind of the progression of SGA and Kevin Knox, those guys have come along this year.
SGA, for the uneducated, is
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander,
who sounds more like a wizard I made up in D&D than anyone else since God Sham God.
Who's the greatest named player in the history of basketball? They've got a between SGA and Hamidou Diallo, they've got some good names on that team.
Hamidou is pretty common for
I just like the way that one rolls off the tongue.
All right, who's the regional final?
Out of that one, you know, I'm not gonna go chalk here. I'm gonna go Arizona Tennessee.
I have Virginia and Loyola Chicago.
Bold.
I'm going off the board here because, one, if you look at Miami's stat profile, they're a very weak six. Chicago had a great season. They're active. I watched their final, and they looked pretty good. Don't really believe in Tennessee that much. I mean, you got Rick Barnes, who
is Rick Barnes.
We'll have a 10 versus 11 matchup in the Sweet 16 versus Texas versus Loyola Chicago. I told you they were bad takes.
You're picking a wild bracket here.
Just one half of it.
Just this portion of it.
The rest of it is pretty chalky. All right. And then the capper of the West. Obviously, this is Michigan's region. We've been talking about it for most of the podcast.
Indeed.
Xavier, play-in game winner versus, we'll take on the second round, Missouri or Florida State. Ohio State versus South Dakota State. Gonzaga versus UNC Greensboro. Houston versus San Diego State, Michigan, Montana. Texas A&M, Providence, North Carolina, and Lipscomb. First ever participants.
All right.
Yeah. All right. We've already talked about the bracket.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, we do not need to break this down too much.
Regional final.
Can I ask you to go first?
No. Yes, fine. I have the Zags versus Michigan. That's what I have.
Damn it, that's mine too. man.
I mean, that's not, I mean.
I don't feel like a huge homer for doing it.
I think.
I like John Beilein against a team he's already seen with a week to prepare.
I might in my heart have UNC Gonzaga.
You know.
I think I do. I was lying. I have UNC Gonzaga.
Okay. So you're going to back off, and I'm going to hold strong here.
All right, hold strong.
I'm going to say John Beilein with a week to prepare against a team he's already seen with a very different team than the one he came in with initially.
I think Michigan like loses to UNC by four, and we're all pointing at the free throws afterwards.
I could also potentially see that happen, but I'm going to stick with my optimistic. Xavier Simpson breaks out, you know, locks down Joel Berry. They've got the pick and roll going in a way that they just absolutely did not early in the season.
Possible.
And John Beilein's a wizard.
Oh, I'm so disappointed in myself. All right. Double Digit C's making the Sweet 16.
No. Not out of this one.
All right. And your final four is?
It's going to have to be Villanova, Duke. I hate that. I'm sorry for it.
Yeah.
I apologize.
There's really no good options in the bracket, though.
Yeah, I'm going to go Villanova, Duke, Arizona, and why not Michigan? Because once you get Michigan Gonzaga, you got to just keep going with it, right?
Yep. I got Virginia, Villanova, Kansas, and UNC.
Boo.
I know. Well, what
Boo.
What do
you do? Gutless.
What you, it's not gutless. All right. Who wins?
Nova. That I mean, we went over some of the absurd stats earlier. That team is impressive.
Yeah, I think I got Virginia. I just this is gonna like this is it. They're actually gonna be like, hey, we're that team for the regular season again.
Yeah, I do think in both the case of Virginia and Purdue, especially the talk of like this coach hasn't been able to break through, so it's never going to happen, is something you hear always until a guy breaks through. And you're basing it on a small sample against a lot of good teams. It seems silly to look at it that way.
All right. Greatest bracket outrage.
Of the inclusions only?
Or just whatever, man. Like what's getting
are we blowing the next segment here?
No, we're not. Ha ha ha.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The cliffhanger from the previous section is our gimmicky top five this week, which is bracket outrages.
Mm-hmm.
And we're casting a wide net here. So it's not necessarily, oh, St. Mary's got left out, but I bet Asus has that.
It might.
Ace number five.
I'm not actually mad about this, but I don't think Xavier should have gotten a one seed over Duke.
Because their resume?
Yeah,
how much do we want to factor in KenPom into all this stuff? Like, I don't even think that should be on the team sheets.
You don't think KenPom should be on that?
Uh-uh. Because
it's predictive.
Right. It's like, I don't want margin of victory acknowledging things on the team sheets. Like, I want, Seth Burns has something called implied Pythag, which is a really good resume ranker. I think Wins Above Bubble should be on that, which is also him. But I just don't like.
See, I like factoring in margin a little bit. I think it's a big thing.
You play to win the game. You play to win the game.
Yeah, but you also play to not get blown out by 20.
I mean, you also play to win the game where it's much better to be up 9 than it is to be up 3. I guess I could see it a little bit. But.
So I think some of that should be factored in. And, you know, Xavier does go down to Providence early in the Big East tournament. Like, they didn't finish with a bang.
They're the number three team in, I think, luck on KenPom. Like, they've won a lot of close games, which is why they're overseeded.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, predictive. Xavier won 28 games. Duke won 26. They've only got two more losses. They played a way harder schedule.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, I just, like, I mean, and also, like, which team would you rather face? Like, I mean, even independent of the Michigan factor, we don't want to go up against a matchup zone.
I understand that sometimes you're going to get a quote-unquote bad draw, but I also think that you need to have that because the structure of the game is not set up to, like, we won this game by, like, 30 if we won this game at all.
Yeah, but I think I'm not as much looking at, like,
philosophical or just, like, you look at the resume.
I'm looking at the resume. I'm looking at Xavier's, you know, wins and losses versus Duke's, and I'm way more impressed with what Duke's got on that sheet.
All right.
And, yeah, I mean, again, I'm happy with the way it shook out. I'm glad Duke is Michigan State's problem and Xavier might be ours.
My number five is there wasn't enough FBI boning.
You know, I'm with you there.
There's a crazy conspiracy theory going around that, like, the decisions that the committee made were made with an eye on the FBI.
Yeah, there was, like, an SB Nation article floating around like that. And it was like,
one of the things they're citing is that Oklahoma State didn't get it. And I'm like, what?
Yeah,
I didn't 18 and 13, 8 and 10 Big 12 team, and the only reason you can come up with why they didn't get in the tournament was the FBI?
Because I've got a few other ideas. Like, they're worse than Syracuse.
Right. and, like, another thing that they're citing is that Arizona got a 4 seed, which is like, what?
Like, first of all, that's, like, right where they should be seated by most every measure.
That was, like, the bracket matrix prediction, I think. Maybe they were, like, the last three or something.
Yeah, and also the Pac-12 is garbage.
And I think the committee looked at that and they're like, the Pac-12 was garbage. And that's why USC didn't get in, even though they finished second in the regular season. But ask Nebraska how much that matters. Like, if you look at their overall resume, USC, I would say they probably should have been in.
They have an argument.
But their exclusion is not completely unjustifiable.
No, the best team they've beaten non-conference was Middle Tennessee.
Who probably should have been in over USC.
Yeah. I might have a note on that.
Yeah. So, you know, in my world, the NCAA would have just preemptively eliminated every team from the tournament except Michigan. And then six scrimmages and then, you know, raise a banner.
Yeah.
So not enough FBI boning. Wait, I guess UNC Greensboro can probably stay. That's it. That's the national title game. Michigan, UNC Greensboro. H number four.
So it's related to Xavier, and it's not really related to the bracket, but you insisted that I should include this anyway when I was complaining about it off air, so we're going with it.
It's an outrage.
So the reason that Xavier Simpson made the rather strange name change to from X to Z is that the NCAA mandated this year that teams put players like birth certificate names on the official rosters.
Which would be terrible news if MGoBlog implemented a similar policy.
Absolutely. We would not be able to handle it.
It would be Harry and Jimmy Chitlins.
Yeah, it'd be awful.
I shouldn't have said that out loud, but that's my real name, Jimmy Chitlins.
I was trying to just move right past it to see to get people to miss it. But
been that my whole life. I was actually born inside a package of sausage in Mobile, Alabama. Been running my whole life.
Is this why you have such a grudge against the South?
I don't have a grudge against the South. What I have is I have a grudge against people who have a grudge against people who hate the South. Well, I know that's complicated. But like there's...
I mean, we may be getting into hair-splitting territory
here. No. Like, the South is fine. I went down to Atlanta. It was fun. It's hot. I don't like that, but that's not their fault. What I don't like is people who are so defensive about the South that, like, anything that, like, I hate barbecue Twitter. That's the way I should put it. So anytime something from New York mentions barbecue... In any way whatsoever.
Can we just say that that most recent one was an absolute crime? That play was not acceptable.
Yes. But the article actually had a sentence in it that was like, why is Brooklyn barbecue spreading across the world when Texas barbecue is better? It literally said that in the article.
Okay. So at that point, maybe the outrage is unnecessary.
And that article was written in 2014.
Okay, that's also
so.
It's also not great.
So yeah, so I have a problem with barbecue Twitter. Barbecue is easy to do. You should try it at home. Braise your ribs, don't smoke them.
Also, the name thing is dumb. I would never have wanted to see Michael Albrecht on Michigan's roster. And
I'm sorry,
that's where we started with this.
I kind of co-opted your number four.
We somehow took quite a turn. But yeah,
my number four is barbecue Twitter. It's not. It is a live studio audience.
Oh my God, I didn't include anything from the selection show.
Of incredibly fake non-fans with like their signs that don't even make any sense.
It was like, and I hate to put it out there that I know what this looks like. It looked like the friggin' After the Final Rose crap from The Bachelor.
Well, you have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Let's just write that off. I've watched multiple seasons of The Great British Baking Show. It just happens.
Yeah, so sometimes these things happen, and the NCAA selection show becoming the live studio audience thing, and then doing it in friggin' alphabetical order. I mean, everything about that selection show was done to piss everybody off.
Started off with the automatic bids if anyone was like, oh my God. Like,
we made it!
We did it! If only they had televised this or shown
tickets. They were like showing reaction shots of the teams like they were going to do anything except like politely clap.
I get it for, like, who's in for the first time? Lipscomb.
Yeah, you know, give them their moment of glory, fine. We didn't need a camera on Michigan, let's be honest. And then they mistimed the shot anyway.
Well, there's always, like, that delay.
There's that lag. But you should know after all these years of doing the show that you need to account for that.
Well, you can't put
them... Because they cut away.
You can't put them on television and have them react without putting them on television.
Yeah, but then you just have to leave them on for a few seconds so they can realize that they're on television and then react. What they did was cut away before Michigan got past the moment of, like, we didn't realize we're on television yet.
I did enjoy that NC State was in some sort of rustic ski lodge.
That's true. They picked an interesting location.
With, like, a fire that they were about to light and maybe have some marshmallows and cocoa. And
which is not something I would associate with, like, North Carolina.
No, I thought that would be, like, Montana set up, to be honest.
Yes.
Anyway.
We've once again strayed.
A little bit.
A tiny bit.
Asia number three.
Not only no Middle Tennessee State in this bracket, but no Middle Tennessee State in the same region as Michigan State.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh my God, Ace! Wait. Oh. I mean, there are three. They couldn't have met an at large and gotten a 14. How do we match them up? They got to be the 11.
Yeah,
they should have been an 11.
Yeah, could have happened. Right
what
there.
What are they doing?
What are they doing?
What are they doing? That's even like one of the last teams in the field at 11.
Yeah, no, it could have happened. It could have been a beautiful.
What in the name of Giddy Potts is the NCAA doing? Come on, man.
So yeah, I'm disappointed by that greatly.
My number three is there are too many regionals. That's what it is. That's the short version of it.
That's how they put these together. Probably
there are too many regionals in the West.
Yeah.
So Jason Lisk of The Big Lead wrote a post that was like, okay, let's look at the top four seeds over the past 10 years. And about 15% of them were in the West and about 40% of them were in the Midwest. And that's kind of what you get with the that's why you got the bracket jam up this year.
Yes.
Where there were just a ton of teams in the Midwest all trying to get to three different sites. And you got to pull that San Diego regional, pull the Boise regional.
Because nobody wants to go to that. John yeah. Calipari made that quite clear if you happen to be watching SportsCenter.
I wasn't.
Night.
You mentioned on the Slack. I thought, well, this will be on all over Twitter. And then it wasn't. I was like, what the heck, Twitter?
I mean, it's because Calipari does it every year.
Yeah.
But this year's rant was a good one. And he did have some righteousness about.
He was furious he got shipped to Boise?
Yeah. He was
They're
like,
a five seed.
Yeah.
They don't get to complain
No, I mean,
about...
his complaints weren't valid, but I did enjoy hearing the line, like, why don't we just have a regional in Anchorage? Because that's what came out of his mouth.
Wow.
So, I enjoyed it. I don't think there should be a regional in Boise either.
No.
It would be nice to shift it a little bit closer to where the good schools are, because you instead reward a handful of schools out west and then have bunch of teams traveling a long way that probably shouldn't.
I mean, I guess the argument is, like, you know, the West, it's a national tournament and people would like to go see it even if they live in Spokane.
Yeah.
Or Walla Walla.
But at the same time, like, how many people are going to NCAA tournament games that don't have a team in the tournament?
You know, I bet Boise gets decent attendance because it's like, we're from Boise. What else are we going to do? Which is probably deeply unfair. And someone who lives in Boise,
you're going to get an email.
It's going to be like, this is a thriving metropolis that is rapidly growing, and you don't even know. And I'm like, you're right. I've never thought about Boise in my life, but
but potatoes. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's just something I call my child. Is it my turn or is it your turn? I think it's your turn.
Is it my turn?
Yes. A Street number two.
No, St. Mary's. That was a robbery.
Was it more or less of a robbery? I guess it was more of a robbery than Middle Tennessee if you have them at number two.
Yeah, and I just, you know, WCC is actually a pretty good league.
Eh.
They beat Gonzaga on the road, and I don't like that a loss in the conference tournament to a good BYU team.
Yeah.
I mean, if they win that game, they are easily in. And
so one loss? I mean,
one loss, like, knocks them out in a way that I think is a little bit of an overreaction.
The overall critique of the committee's selection and seating that applies to mid-majors is one that I entirely agree with. Where they just give you zero credit for going on the road and beating, like, the number 90 team, which is tough.
Yeah, that's not easy. I mean, you know, we get that with, you know, watching Michigan struggle in these games against crappy Big Ten teams. That's about the equivalent, but going on the road and winning is hard in college basketball.
Yep. My number two is KPI, which is on the team sheets.
Yep.
And is a
created by some Michigan State flacky.
Doof.
also doof.
And it's explicitly supposed to predict the seeding of the NCAA field.
And it has failed miserably.
It's not like Ken Pom. It's more like, you know, crashing the dance. Or
yeah, it is not a predictive model for how good these teams are if they play each other.
It's explicitly a seeding model, and it is 112th of 113 qualifiers on the bracket matrix.
You have failed miserably.
And it had Michigan as a 5 seed.
Yeah.
And Michigan State is a 4 seed. It was
it hated the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, and,
hated.
And the RPI also kind of hated the Big Ten. So it takes all the stupidity already baked into the NCAA numbers, doubles down on it, and gives it the sheen of analytics, which is like mind blowing.
Yeah,
it's just the worst thing in the world. And then it gets in onto the team sheets because Mark Hollis, who quit immediately as soon as the outside the lines report was released. I don't know if there's anything to that. What was that?
Just I don't know. A Mark Hollis definitely would maybe should not be in charge of anything noise.
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna roll with that.
With that.
So he gets this monstrosity on the team sheets because he thinks the guy who is doing this is awesome because he can, like, remember phone numbers.
Yeah, no, that was seriously, like, the Michigan State Athletic Department thought this dude was a genius because he could remember cell phone numbers off the top of his head. And so that qualifies him to do analytics.
And the frustrating part is that there is, like, a cottage industry of these people who you could reach out to who are math majors.
Yeah.
Who are actual people who know how to do this and not just some apparatchik in an athletic department.
Who knows phone numbers off the top of his head.
The good news is the committee appears to think this is as much of a joke as we do.
Yes, they do not appear to be taking it quite seriously.
So it's on the team sheets. It means nothing.
But, you know, in that case, get it off the team sheets and get something useful on there just in case it throws somebody on the committee off.
Yeah. Also, you know, it's called the KPI. So it's like, it's even like the RPI. It's disgusting.
Except the guy's name is Kevin Palga and he named it after himself.
What a jabroni. Typical, isn't it? Except without horrible consequences, just slightly annoying ones. Ace, you're number one.
Syracuse getting in. It's the flip side of the mid-major conversation.
I'm so sick of them getting in at the back end.
Yeah, the annoying thing is going to be when they win like three games. But they should not have been in the field. They had a ton of chances to beat good teams and didn't really do it outside of nipping Clemson late in the season at home by 3 points.
Yeah.
Got smashed by Carolina in the tournament. Got smashed by most of the good teams they played. Got crushed by Kansas on a neutral court. And they have, you know, some bad losses hanging around them. Georgia Tech, especially. Ugh. Yeah.
And
a 15-point loss at Boston College. I mean, it's at some point, like, and it's not like...
And also, let's talk about the aesthetics of Syracuse basketball.
It's horrendous. I mean, they're ugly. They're 321st in the country in effective field goal percentage.
They have fewer assists than anyone else in the Power Five. Their offense is just ISO, 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 and hopefully we can get something.
It's volleyball.
And then the 2-3 zone on the other end is just hard to watch.
So, first of all, I think if you have a decision to make, you should leave Syracuse out anyway for that reason. Also, the FBI thing.
Also the FBI thing.
And their best non-conference win is Maryland at home. So I don't even know what we're looking at because this was not a team that did well in their conference. They went 8-10 and then flamed out in the tournament.
Yeah, like I don't know why on earth that team would ever get precedence over, you know, a 28-5 mid-major that had one bad game in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean,
like Middle Tennessee is a much more interesting team to see.
Or even I don't really know. Notre Dame should have also gotten in over this team, and that's a team from the same conference. Notre Dame did not. Notre Dame, first of all, beat Syracuse on the road, so you've got in their only matchup. So you've got a head-to-head win there. They had injuries, finished with the same record.
You think the Bonzi factor would kind of push it over the top for Notre Dame?
Like I am guessing that
honestly, I'd rather see Notre Dame in the tournament than Syracuse, just from a fan standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team where you can see why they were held back.
Notre Dame has never bought a five-star out from under Michigan.
There's also that. They beat Wichita State on a neutral court in the non-conference portion. They absolutely obliterated LSU in the non-conference portion.
Yeah. Which shouldn't turn out to be that bad of a loss. Like, they're an NIT team.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's bad that they also lost to Georgia Tech and also real bad that they lost to Ball State. That's an ugly, ugly loss that I assume is the one reason they're not in here over Syracuse.
I guess.
But I would still, those two teams played each other, and at Syracuse's place, Notre Dame won, and the rest of the resume is...
There was no return trip.
There was no return trip, and the rest of the resume is very similar. And when you look at any sort of predictive model, I mean, Notre Dame is just a better team.
My number one is something we've mentioned earlier in this segment, is a systematic underrating of games you should win and do win. So if you are a kind of borderline at-large team and you are going to like the number 80, the number 90 KenPom team, that's a game that you lose a third of the time. So The problem with the quadrants, even though they've made them a little bit better by looking at home and road, is that they kind of throw these games into bins when it shouldn't be like that. Like, we were all looking at whether Penn State could get ahead of the 75 line, and they couldn't.
Yeah, and that was, like, we felt a big deal. And when you look at some of the outcomes of, especially on the bubble,
yeah,
it appears to have been a big deal to the committee.
And so,
even though they said it wouldn't be,
and there's no reason to, like, split these games up into quadrant one and quadrant two when you have ways that you can put these games together and take the measure of a top 75 team on the road. You know how likely a team is to win that game now, because we've done the work. So you can give every game the exact amount of credit that you should, and then you get ranking systems like Seth Burns put together, and I highly recommend his work. I think he's the best guy out there for sensible selection and seeding mechanisms. And it's 2018. We shouldn't have anything with PI in it.
Yeah.
Except Magnum PI. Can we reboot that? Let's reboot that.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Mustaches are great.
Yeah.
Roll with it.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, to that end with the quadrants and throwing things into bins, and back to my number one a little bit. Syracuse gets into this tournament in large part because they end up going 3-3 in quadrant two games.
3-3?
Yeah, they had a weird dearth of quadrant two games.
Okay.
But two of those victories, you know, when you're at home, that extends to the number 75 team in RPI.
Right.
They had home wins over the number 74 and number 75 teams.
Yep. So, you know, we've heard constantly that they're continually de-emphasizing RPI and moving away from it, and they make gestures toward it, but
it always comes back around.
It does. So they've said that this was the swan song for RPI entirely. We'll see what they replace it with. Given the trends, I'm not super hopeful. I mean, this is a bunch of old guys in a room.
Yeah, I don't expect a lot of these problems to be solved.
They're not huge problems. Like, I think
it's mostly stuff that sorts out on that is an issue with the bubble, and those bubble teams are not winning the tournament. So these, I mean,
no. I do think that they should make it official that the two play-in games for at-larges are always going to be a power conference, and I'm going to cut that line off at the Big East.
Yeah.
Versus a non-power conference. Because, like, you could just settle on the court.
I'd almost rather those, like, you give preference to the mid-major teams getting, not being in those games in the first place, and say with the power conference teams, you got to win your way in here.
Well, the thing is, like, I think it'd be, I mean, the audience wants to see Middle Tennessee. They don't want to see Syracuse.
That's the other thing. I don't get why the tournament, because people seem to think that a lot of it is based on, like, you know, a lack of fan. And I can get, you know, for them wanting to fill an arena. But first of all,
you're not supposed to fill an arena for an 11
season. Yeah, first of all, you're not supposed to do that. Second of all, a lot of times you see those fan bases travel really well because it's like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Whereas with Syracuse fans, it's like, well, we're going to flame out, so why would I go to this?
Where was Northwestern last year? They were in, like, Kansas City.
It wasn't close to... Yeah,
and there every, like, Mike Wilbon was there, and where has Mike Wilbon been for the last 85 years? In a cave in Chicago, complaining about Michigan.
So yeah, I mean, like, a massive part of the appeal of the tournament is seeing mid-major teams upset high-major teams.
Right, like give us more of that. You know,
like I want Bryce Drew. I do not want Tyus Battle.
Yeah, there's no upside to Syracuse winning or USC winning. I mean, I guess they get left out, but just throw St. Mary's in, throw Middle Tennessee in, and if an 8-10 in conference, I mean, you might want to. I think you should ban major conference teams that aren't 500 in their conference. I mean,
you should at least look at them with some serious side eye. I mean, because like Notre Dame went 8-10, and there are reasons why.
Sure, yeah, but like, how many 8-10 major conference teams are in this tournament? At least three.
Yeah, and that's Syracuse, at least two too many.
Oklahoma, Texas. Like, I know the Big 12 was real good, but like, I don't really need to see if a team that wasn't even 500 in its conference is the best team in the country. I know they're not.
That's a good point.
All right. I think we've complained enough. We have a daily allotted dose of complaining that we die if we don't reach.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, an allotment. Like, it's got to be a very large allotment.
We don't complain that much about basketball. Shut up, Dave.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
A brief Aces Hockey Podcast, as mentioned in the intro. Ace has been ejected from the studio because he turned on overtime just in time.
Still here!
Am I allowed to talk now?
No! Nobody talks! Everybody is quiet. The child is quiet, Ace is quiet, David's quiet, and now I am quiet. This is a silent podcast. It's a visual, silent, professional podcast. Are you just going to leave that dead air?
Well, it'll probably get cut out when I edit it.
Okay.
Is that all right?
I think we have to leave this in, though.
We can leave this part in, but when I hit the truncate silence button, usually the space goes.
So there wasn't even any dead air.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk about the hockey.
Okay.
So Michigan loses in overtime to Ohio State very quickly in a game that was, you know, it was even-ish. I thought Ohio State probably had an advantage, but the perception there kind of gets moved if one of those Quinn Hughes shots that goes off the post actually goes in.
They might win it then.
No, I mean, exactly. And I don't think that Ohio State really had a lot of great A's that weren't on the power play. Penalty kill still remains, you know, the huge issue.
Most of the penalties I thought were all right. The Calderon one was a little...
I thought everything in that game was a weak call except for the first one on Michigan, which was a pretty obvious hook.
Yeah.
Like Michigan got a power play because there was an open ice hit where the guy wasn't striding that they called charging. And there's this kind of... Any hard hit is now real suspect. And you watch it on replay and, yeah, the guy got hit hard, but it wasn't an elbow. It wasn't to the head. Like, you know, Warren got ejected from a game that was a shoulder-to-shoulder hit. And they went and reviewed it. And I'm just, I don't know.
And then they reviewed one last week and didn't do anything.
I understand that the players have to be protected, but it's just bad when any like hard hit, I'm looking at the ref, even though it looks completely fine. And that's a penalty that went on Ohio State, right? That's not something where I'm like...
I was wondering if they were just trying to give Michigan maybe a power play. Because like they called one or two on Ohio State at that point. It was getting late in the game. Maybe they're evening it out, something.
I think Ohio State had two penalties at that point on two power plays. So, like, that's not...
But they're about halfway through the game, I think, at that point,
I guess,
too.
I don't know. I thought that was a bad call on Michigan's other power play. I thought was a pretty weak call on Ohio State as well. And then the whistles went away, and I didn't think that they really missed anything, but the announcers kept going on and on about how, like, they just swallow their whistles, and I was like, I don't think there's much to call.
No, I didn't. Nothing was super blatant, and like you said, a lot of the stuff was kind of ticky-tack, and so in that sense, it's probably a well-played game.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State is, I think, on path for a one seed now.
They're going to be a one, I'm pretty sure, and I think they deserve to be.
And, you know, Michigan 0-5 against them this year, but that game was not like the other games where it didn't look like Michigan really belonged on the same ice. Like, they look like a slightly worse team than Ohio State, and that's kind of, it's a lot like the progress they've made in the second half of the season against Notre Dame and like that.
And I don't even think that they're a worse team in terms of just general hockey play. I think that they make a couple other mistakes. I think that maybe one of the goals Levine let in was a little soft, and they took some penalties and don't have a good penalty kill. But when you're talking about just playing straight up hockey, five on five and stuff, they're right with them.
I thought they were even 5-on-5. And then the obvious penalty kill issues come into account. And the major development, I guess, on ice is the fact that Quinn Hughes is really coming on into his own as a guy who's controlling all phases of play when he's on the ice.
He's like a fourth forward when he plays on the ice, and he can still get back. You almost have, not necessarily an odd man rush, but you have an extra guy who can move well with the puck and find other guys for, like, sort of backdoor passes and stuff, that he finds people on the power play with that way. He creates his own shot. Like, when that line, when they had the top line out with the top defensive pairing, like, Michigan was literally dominating the game. It wasn't really close, but they were forechecking Ohio State to death and turning them over and getting good looks. And I mean, they, like, right before one of the goals, or they drew the power play, like, they were on the ice for like 30 to 40 seconds in the Ohio State zone.
Yeah, there were a couple of shifts there where they were overwhelmed, and it just got to the point where I'm waiting for him to get back on the ice. That's something that, you know, happens with TJ Hensick. It happens with very few other players where, like, I just look at times when he's not on the ice as opportunities for him to rest, and if something good happens, something good happens.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you get to the playoffs in the NHL, you kind of look at your defensemen, or like, can this guy play 30 minutes? And like, if Hughes can do that, like, I
honestly wouldn't have been surprised if Hughes approached 30 minutes in that Ohio State game. It seemed like he and Ciccone were out there almost every other shift.
The other thing that I was wondering is that Zach Shaw and I were talking in the arena, and we were debating if Michigan was going to, like, short shift some guys and maybe, like, not roll all four lines. But
they did a bit.
A little.
The fourth,
like,
line didn't really get a whole lot of time in the third period.
No, but they were still out there.
They didn't,
sometimes.
They didn't shorten as much as Ohio State did. But Ohio State dressed seven defensemen, so they weren't really planning to roll fourth line at all.
Yeah, just, I don't know. The difference between those top two lines being out there, and it's only one game, and it's a playoff game.
I mean, personally,
I don't know.
Personally, I thought it was the shifts were the bench was shorter than it was under Berenson. Not
okay.
by a ton, but I really think that the defense core was, like, I don't think we saw Luce in the second half of that game.
I would have to go look.
So I think they did shorten it at least on defense, and it makes a lot of sense. But back to Hughes. Hughes earlier in the year was obviously a super talented player, but not a lot of the things he was doing were actually turning into dangerous opportunities, and he was also kind of leaving Michigan exposed at the back sometimes. He's improved. He knows what he can and cannot do mostly at this level. He's still
getting better.
Super aggressive and will give the puck up because he gets his stick lifted in a situation where every other defenseman wouldn't even be trying to make a play.
Sure.
But you know, he's really coming into his own, and I felt like when he was on the ice on 5-on-5, that Michigan was by far the better team.
Yes, totally agree. He does still have his hiccups where he'll get trapped or a guy will poke it away. But like you said, most other defensemen aren't even trying to do what he's thinking about trying to do.
No.
So that's not even a question with anyone else. And I think it's probably in the end worth it for Michigan because they don't have the quality of depth anywhere. And so if you have probably best skater, if not player overall on the ice and attempting to make a play, especially in the tournament, like you're going to need that. You're going to need him to make a play. And honestly, he almost made about 3 to 4 plays in this game and could have won it easily.
Yeah, he should have won the game.
About 3 times.
Which is not to say that like he should have won the game and did not. He is a failure. It's just like, you rerun those shots that he had over and over. He scores at least one of them, 90% of the time?
He hit two posts, and then I guess it maybe goes down as a breakaway. I didn't count it as an OMR because basically the defenseman handed him the puck like in the slot.
Yeah.
And so he kind of walked in on a quasi breakaway.
Yeah.
And Romeo made the save.
And he had a couple other just blasts from the slot that he had earned.
He had that one where he just came flying down, was hit with a pass, and just rocketed just wide.
Yeah. And he's going to put one of those in almost every game, and then you don't even go to overtime.
Right.
So,
and if he puts in two, it's a completely different game.
Right. So his development really is the main bit of news right now, because we've seen Michigan become a fairly solid and responsible defensive team that's hard to score on. And I think 2 out of 3 Ohio State goals were on the penalty kill, right?
Oh, yeah. No, they were 2 power play goals. It's the only way they scored until that OMR goal. And it's funny because the two things that we kind of track, you know, especially in the second half of this year, are getting caught out and are you giving up a man advantage? And Michigan, that's the only way Ohio State was able to score. It's kind of like Notre Dame where, you know, we said Michigan can skate with these teams. They just can't put themselves in positions where you're at a desperate disadvantage. And those are two situations in hockey where you are.
So Michigan's playing well. They feel a little bit like the basketball team in that they've obviously improved a great deal over the course of the season. They have a young point guard type guy who's really emerging into a dynamic player. And they have a huge fatal flaw that everybody is worried is going to ruin the season. It's a free throw shooting and the penalty kill.
Yep.
Michigan's in, and this is a good year to get in because there's not a dominant team, and Michigan can take their swing. So we'll see. The selection show is next weekend, and Michigan will be a 2 or a 3.
They're going to be a 3, I think. They're 10th right now.
There's a pairwise predictor up that gives Michigan a 20% chance to move up to the number 8 seed. Doesn't really matter.
No. You look at some of those 2s, and Denver is a 2, and Northeastern and Duluth, probably 3 teams that are...
Well, Michigan doesn't want to get swapped. There's a big difference between number 7 and number 6. So Michigan doesn't want to get swapped into a bad matchup. But that's what it would take.
It's also going to look like they're going to probably try to keep teams out east and out west where they're from. And
no, that's not going to happen for the...
You don't think it's happen at all?
Seeds. I mean...
Well, it'll be...
Michigan's just going to go wherever because it doesn't matter, right?
But the other thing is that Penn State right now is the last 3 and they are the host in Allentown.
Yeah, they'll be in Allentown.
Right.
If they're the last 3 and they're the host at Allentown, then they'll just put the number 5 with them and not even blank. Because it's going to be hard for them to not have Big Ten matchups because there's a lot of Big Ten teams in the conference.
But there's also a lot of NCHCs as well. There's 4.
It's unlikely that
I just think that if you have a team from the Northeast in the tournament, which because there's probably only going to be a handful, they're probably going to try to stack those 2 East regionals if you can. But that would mean that Michigan might end up with somebody like Denver out west.
No, they won't do that because a flight is a flight. So they don't care if Michigan's flying west or flying east.
Well, I hope so. I'd like to avoid Denver. So
I don't. That's not going to happen. I've been looking at these things a long time, and that's not at all like that.
All right. Well, I will defer to you in this case.
All right. That about does it. We only had one game this weekend. It was an unfortunate outcome, but Michigan will be in the tournament in 2 weeks' time. So looking forward to that, except when they're on the penalty kill.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Amander, along with Brian Cote. The numbers are in, and the people have spoken. The selection show ratings dropped by more than half this year, so yeah, that was a terrible idea.